Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Wandering Into Wellness, episode
6. Now I do need two hands. Finally.
Finally, it's happened. There. We have achieved two hand status.
Mm.
So today we are in this beautiful place.
We are in this beautiful place. We're up in Roscommon, visiting my somewhat erstwhile farm.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought we'd take a little detour to Slieve Bawn. I know literally nothing about Slieve Bawn. I can tell you, the tiny things I can tell you about Slieve Bawn are that as I'm on my farm, it's the one kind of geographical physical feature that stands out in the land.
Mm.
It's a way across our lake, and then you see this hill. And then 2 years ago, they started putting windmills on it. Turbines.
Windmills.
I prefer windmills. I like Dutch clogs and windmills.
Yeah.
Tulips. Exactly, that's it. But turbines on it, and there was a lot of controversy over it, and a lot of the locals would have been not so happy to be putting turbines in the landscape. All of the issues that we all know about with turbines in terms of soil and soil structure and runoff and noise and all these sorts of things. But fundamentally, what's lovely is that even my, not elderly, but like neighbour who's in his 60s, you know, when he saw them actually up and now running, he's like, you know, I thought they were a blight in the landscape, and now I'm not doing a Roscommon accent. very consciously avoiding doing that. He's like, but now that I see them, there's something nice and kind of, I think he might not have used the word contemplative, but something about it that, like, it's nice. It's like, it's a slow, rhythmical thing. It's not a poisonous thing visually at all.
It isn't. It feels really relaxing when you're looking at them. It's like a meditative.
And we nearly fell over when we were looking.
when
you're underneath them.
You just want to keep watching them. Your eye gets drawn to them. And they're very silent.
Yeah, absolutely. There's
hear
no
nothing.
Noise.
It's just there, and I can't hear anything.
That's the controversy that always people talk about. It's like, oh, it's right behind my land, and it makes a lot of noise. We're maybe 100 yards from 3 or 4 of them, and nada.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, this is where we are, and we thought it would be nice today to call our podcast An Apple a Day Keeps the Doctor Away.
Indeed, because it does.
It does, it does. They have so many benefits, and one of the major things we wanted to talk about today was apple cider vinegar.
Nice.
I know that I love apple cider vinegar, and I would use it a lot in myriad different ways, but people are always asking me, what can I use apple cider vinegar for, and why would you use it? And so we thought, yeah, let's talk about that then.
And the internet is like fairly rife with uses for apple cider vinegar. It seems like if there's an affliction you have, and you Google it, you look at the images and you go, and then you go back to the things, natural cures for whatever, you know, gingivitis to diabetes to whatever, heart disease, pretty much everything, apple cider vinegar is up there. It's amazing.
It is. And it's been around for years and years and years and years and years.
It's a really old remedy. I mean, like, what's nice about it as well, it's quite a good Irish remedy. Like, there's very few things when people come into the shop and the hop sack, they're, you know, that you can recommend that aren't from thousands of miles away, that aren't like exotic herbs or exotic whatever, medicinal mushrooms or whatever. But in the case of apple cider vinegar, people have been brewing it in Ireland for hundreds of years and using it here. That and carrageen moss, I feel like my two faves.
Yeah,
home remedies, you know, superfoods, whatever, but from Ireland, which is nice.
And that's what we want to do, part of what we want to do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Champion Irish.
Exactly.
Irish people, Irish experts, Irish foods, Irish remedies, Irish landscapes.
Irish places, yeah, big time.
So it's nice. It's a nice synchronism.
Synchronicity?
Synchronicity?
Yeah, why not? It's one of those. Yeah,
we'll
definitely. It's a big part of the reason we did this, that's for sure.
So, apple cider vinegar. Let's talk first. The main question I always get asked is, do you use it with the mother or without the mother? And then people are like, the
what's
mother?
A mother? Yeah.
What is the mother?
I'm leaving my mother at home, thanks.
Exactly. Why are you talking about this mother? So, can you explain to us a little bit about the mother and what it is and why would it be good for you?
So, the mother is basically, when people talk about the mother in apple cider vinegar, it is the, what happens is a bacterial culture, like, so it's a ferment.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take sliced cored apples or whatever and introduce them into essentially a water bath with a starter, which is essentially some of that culture grows over them, makes this like film.
Mm-hmm.
That film is called the mother, and the film is made of like mucopolysaccharides, which are basically the bacteria making their home, make their nice little structural home. So like, and it thickens over the top layer over time. And it's as the bacteria ferment, they release lactic acid and other acids, and that what drops the pH of the apple cider vinegar, and that's what what creates a lot of its benefits, some of those acids, and then also that's what allows it to preserve as well, because anything below like a pH of 4 is pretty much never going to go off. It's very difficult to have you know, any sort of what are food spoilers bacteria present in something as vinegary as vinegar.
Yeah. And my lovely friend Katie Sanderson, mm-hmm. who did all the living dinners and makes the white mouse, which is so delicious.
One of our faves.
We'll talk about that.
Is that our first shout out in our podcast? I believe so.
I think so.
And kind of a name drop. She's super.
She is super. She helps me make our cider vinegar at home with lovely organic vinegar. And she was saying that you want to, when you make it, you want to leave it in a place that's frequented by people in your house. So it wants to be a place that's live, that's alive with people.
I love that idea.
You're walking around and it's like part of your house. It's part of your, it's not a dead place. It's not put away into a place where no one visits. It's part of your house and it's part of that. And it, just like when people talk to plants and they talk about the idea of plants growing better when they get love and attention, it's there and it's part of the hub of your house. It's in the room that's most used.
And it's you're imbuing it with life, and it's imbuing you with life and all that sorts of kind of energetic things.
Picking up on all your
your-ness. Yeah, your ness, whatever your ness is, happens to be at the time. Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. I think the energetics of ferments are really interesting as well, because we have a relationship to them, particularly at the moment, where we're kind of finding they're really becoming part of a social dynamic, like where people are learning about them in group workshops. And there's a great kind of, you know, like the oral traditions. It feels like we're bringing all those things back, which are innately make us into more community-based organisms, because we can't survive on our own and get to hear about this stuff. Yes, we can use YouTube and we can look up, you know, umpteen different ways to brew cider vinegar probably on there, but until we've spoken to somebody who does it, it's still kind of mystical.
You need to be able to ask those questions.
Yeah,
you need to be able to go,
but what if mine, blah, blah, blah.
Mine looks like this. Is it still okay? How long can it? Do I put it in the fridge? Do I take out this? Mm. There are so many questions that you have, and I love that there's experts that you go to who've been doing it for years and years, and it is that knowledge that's been passed down generation to generation. And not just that, but you're sharing the cultures.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
big
you know,
time.
When you're doing your kefir, you're passing those cultures to people, and then you have whole groups of people who use their kefir from the same culture that's been shared amongst friend groups. So it's naturally building those communities literally from the very basis of
that's
it,
what it's about,
which is lovely.
Yeah,
it's making those communities, not just the people who are interested in it, but who are actually tied together by the same thing.
Yeah. And so the other thing, obviously, when it comes to the community, is the bacterial community that's inside your cider vinegar and what that does to the bacterial community inside your gut. That's
right.
I mean, that's the huge, probably the biggest initial effect of cider vinegar, is its acidifying effect on the gut. And so when you acidify the gut, so we always think of like alkalinizing, alkaline foods, blah, 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 all these sorts of ideas. But the push always seems to be to alkalize. But actually, we want to go the other way when it comes to our gut. We want to acidify the gut and alkalinize the cells.
Okay.
Amazing. Cider vinegar does both of those things.
Amazing.
Which is really cool. So it's an acid on contact. So it's got acetic acid, it's got hippuric acid, all these sorts of lovely acids. And what they do is, when they reduce the pH of the gut, largely like organisms like Candida, E. coli, C. diff, these sorts of things, they like slightly more alkaline environment than there are more friendly bacteria, let's say, Acidophilus and Rhamnosus and these sorts of guys that love acidic kind of environments. And the more we can culture acidic environments, then the more we get a resilient host kind of community of bacteria in our gut, that we're going to improve nutrient transport, we're going to like modulate inflammation, we're going to help protect the gut from antigens, from pathogens, and from like maybe allergens in foods, just strengthening resilient, making more resilient immune system in general as well.
So interesting.
Isn't it fascinating?
Yeah. And so let's then, when we were looking at benefits and people are talking about benefits, acetic acid is one of the things that's kind of spurns off a few different benefits of cider vinegar, doesn't it?
Yeah. So well, acetic acid obviously is the one that you would get in. You get it in all vinegars. Mm-hmm. So acetic acid is traditionally what we see in, like, you know, chef's distilled white vinegar as well. And also it seems to have a lot of like antimicrobial benefits as well. As far as the host of things that are in cider vinegar goes, I don't know actually a heck of a lot about acetic acid in itself. Did you read more about it than I did?
No, it just seemed to come up every time you were looking at something and you were reading studies about
acetic acid.
It was acetic acid.
Interesting.
And then a combination of that plus pectin.
Pectin, actually, yeah.
So
okay, yeah. And the potassium. Yeah.
And the potassium.
Yeah.
Right, so
that's kind of our little triangle, isn't it? Yeah.
So those are the three.
Yeah.
So the combination of the acetic acid and the pectin seems to have an interesting effect on our blood cholesterol.
Wow, okay.
We're reading about.
Yeah, so pectin obviously is a fiber. Fiber-rich foods, as we know, help to kind of like bind cholesterol and draw it out of our system. So like oat bran is another one. well, guar gum is another big one as well from point of view of cholesterol and stuff. But all fibers, all soluble fibers, help to bind old cholesterol as it's getting shoved out from our liver and help to draw it out of the gut and make like proper stools and essentially keep our gut kind of moving properly.
Yeah, I was saying a lot about how it helps with gut motility. So if you're someone who would suffer from constipation or IBS, those kinds of things, that taking cider vinegar regularly is really good for helping that motility, help regulate those things.
One of the things I think, the only caution actually we probably should give in this podcast, well, maybe there's a couple of cautions, but the first caution probably give is that people who have like an upset or sensitive digestive system, quite often, again, a lot of people coming into the shop saying, oh, I tried cider vinegar, like really upset my stomach or whatever. And those, quite often, the people who can really benefit from it, the people who are like most in the spectrum who need maybe, you know, to acidify the gut, let's say. But they might have a very raw digestive tract lining as a result of reflux or other kind of dysbiosis type things. And the vinegar, that is acidic nature of the vinegar, can be really harsh if it's taken in too high a concentration. So I know we haven't got to the stage of giving directions yet, but like not starting with more than like a teaspoon in glass warm water per day.
I was told also that if you're starting out and you're going for that kind of slowly thing, if you have a system that's more sensitive, you should start by doing a teaspoon in the warm water but with honey. And
okay,
that honey will modulate that effect and then slowly get the honey out of there, slowly wean back.
That makes sense. I mean, honey's mucolytic as well. Mm-hmm. And also the weird thing about honey is that, so all sugar is acid forming, so back to this acid alkali thing, but for some reason honey is alkalinizing. So we don't really know what goes on in honey. We've looked at tiny little bits of honey. We've looked at the peroxide activity. To some degree, we've looked at like other enzymes within, particularly Manuka honeys. They've like identified, I think, between 9 and 12 different enzymes that they think have some of the beneficial immune system effects. But there's so many aspects of honey that we don't really understand. It's confounding, actually, to be honest with you. So when we take honey, we kind of like, a lot of people are going to listen and go, but that's putting sugar in my morning drink. Like, what?
Yeah,
and I think, yeah, exactly. What are you? This is a health podcast, you bold people. But I think honey is a very different thing when it's taken in its raw form and taken in context with things like cider vinegar. You're absolutely right. It buffers that effect of acidity along the gut wall.
And thinking of that, well, while we're on the blood sugar subject, isn't it true that if you take cider vinegar last thing at night with your evening meal, the studies have shown that it lowers your blood sugars in the morning, so that effect carries on through to the morning. So that's really important for people who might have like type 2 diabetes
big time,
or blood sugar regulation levels. And what I read about was that the medical stuff that you can take that might be lowering blood sugars can usually only last a couple of hours.
Whereas
the cider vinegar effects seem to be lasting for 8 or 9 hours. You
interesting.
Take them at night, you're still ending up with that low blood sugar in the morning.
That's really interesting.
Which is good.
Wow, which is good, which is okay, I suppose. It's profoundly effective, let's be honest.
So alongside what you might already be doing, saying if you have type 2 diabetes, just use apple cider vinegar.
But
something that can go alongside with your management.
Absolutely, and other things that could be really helpful for that. I know a lot of people use Ceylon cinnamon as well. Cinnamon has got a really powerful effect in terms of blood sugars. It helps to mimic the action of insulin. And there's I know a few people who testimonially have used it alongside insulin medication, alongside testing their blood sugar levels, and they've actually encouraged entered hypoglycemic states on like within a few days of using like cinnamon on a regular basis.
Isn't it interesting that apple and cinnamon gets used so often together?
Yes,
in recipes, and those two things have those similar properties. And I wonder, like, traditionally, people just knew. People just had this natural inclination towards, okay, if we combine apple with the cinnamon, it's going to have this effect on lowering our blood sugar.
Absolutely,
regulating our blood sugar levels.
Yeah, so I was at a functional medicine conference 2 years ago, Functional Medicine Institute of Ireland, which was a fantastic conference. And one of the speakers there, I can't remember his name, was going into all sorts of interesting biochemistry. And then he flicked up a slide and it said stewed apple, you know, enhances AHRL ligand protein production in the gut by blah, blah, blah. So it was essentially a study, like a major university study on the uses of stewed apple. And specifically stewed, something to do with the heating affects the structure of the apple. Look, anything we cook, we chemically change the structure of it. And it did something to the fiber that fiber then interacted with bacteria in the gut that then encouraged this production of these both short chain fats and AHRL ligand proteins, which have like an amazing knock-on effect in terms of genetic expression and all sorts of very interesting things and like immune system support. So
interesting, because we would have always and this is just something that's been passed down kind of through my mom and then through my granny, if anyone's sick in the family, if they have a tummy bug or if they have an illness, the first food that you give them is stewed apple.
Yeah.
So my family would be like, you're sick.
Not the flat 7-Up, no?
No.
Good.
No. Stew the apple.
Yeah.
And that would be your first food that you're introducing back in is stewed apple.
Isn't that amazing?
And so if it does have these benefits for immune support. That's interesting, isn't it?
Good old instincts, and then that cinnamon as well alongside it, and golly, good old apples. Yeah, amazing. So what else are we talking about when it comes to so we like potassium we mentioned.
Yes.
What big effects are we like talking about when it comes to potassium?
Gosh, there's a lot.
There really is. So essentially, like, if you've got a potassium-rich food, you're changing osmotic pressure in the cell. So you're kind of like, as a top-down effect, changing every other...
Protective, isn't it? Protective.
Yeah.
It helps to protect the cell, the quality of the cells.
Yeah, to a degree, because it draws... So potassium is the most abundant mineral outside our cells, where sodium is the most abundant mineral inside the cells. So if you want to reduce blood pressure, let's say, you want to draw water out of the cells, and that's what potassium will do. So potassium-rich foods like cider vinegar are amazing for that.
But, and also, just thinking about that, often when I study bone therapy, we would use apple cider vinegar to draw fluid off joints.
Interesting.
Or if you had cellular tissue issues around, so say you had big bad bruising, or you had edema, or those kinds of things at ankles and at knees, you would use cider vinegar.
As a pack?
As a pack.
Cool.
On your knees and on your ankles to help draw fluid.
I got very whoopy there. Cool! Amazing! No, I just never heard it being used like transdermally. That's really
and
cool.
And it really helps, especially with bruising.
Makes a lot of sense. It's pretty stinky and pretty sticky, but
Well, you just soak a washcloth with it, a little square, put it on, and put a bandage over the top, wrap a towel around, leave it on overnight, and it really, really does work.
So you're saying for bruising, for what was the other
for
thing
bruising.
For edema?
Yeah, for edema, or if you had swelling on a joint, you have for inflammation. Because one of the things we know about apple cider vinegar is that it has good anti-inflammatory properties.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So topical use.
And when it comes to
absorbing transdermally.
And edema is such an important thing as well. So like when people train and overtrain, and edema becomes like a big issue. What are the things like? Have you come across like in yoga people using sesame oil or castor oil to also reduce that edema thing? Reduce
castor
oil
packs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's another really interesting one, isn't it? Because it helps like draw heat from the joint as well. And you really feel a difference from that.
Yeah, you do. That's a big Chinese medicine would talk about castor oil a lot.
Yeah, and I don't know a lot about it because I think unfortunately it was kind of, it became a bit of a taboo. I think wasn't it used by bulimics or by anorexics at some?
But
they stopped selling it in pharmacies for internal use apparently. I don't know how many years ago, but I can think a couple of decades. I remember my mum telling me this because it was getting used because you can essentially evacuates your gut, and so it reduces kind of nutrient absorption, reduces like weight gain and that sort of stuff. So it was a bit of a scary thing. But when it's used correctly, wowie, it's a really really powerful. Powerful medicinal herb, essentially.
Yeah.
Nice. So, what other things then?
So, skin. There's lots of beauty uses.
Beauty uses. Here we go. This is your territory.
I'll talk about
Face
it.
Yoga Lydia talks beauty.
I'm going to be like the heading in my book.
Possibly. Oh, you've got a book?
Potentially.
Ooh, watch out.
Yes, anyway. beauty benefits. You can use it as a toner and an astringent on your face if you're prone to oily skin. It's a good one. You wouldn't necessarily use that if you had a more dry skin tone.
Yeah, because it's pretty harsh.
Because it's quite strong. And you can use it. A lot of the times now they're talking about how we overuse products in our hair, that we use too much shampoo, conditioner, then we might use dry shampoo, we might use hairsprays, all this kind of stuff, and that those products layer up and they make our hair more dull.
Yeah.
So you'd use apple cider vinegar as a rinse at the end of your shampoo and conditioner to help strip away some of that product buildup and also leave your hair really shiny.
Nice.
And you just obviously need to make sure that you wash it out properly so
you
don't walk around smelling of cider vinegar.
I suffer quite a dry scalp. And I started using cider vinegar as a rinse on my scalp. Oh, it's a few years ago. And it literally totally cleared it up. Mm. So there was like there's a protocol you can use. You can use it for, well, dandruff actually works for it as well because it's got some antifungal abilities, but for a dry scalp, because it helps to balance the pH and improve the quality of the acid mantle in the skin, which is that protective barrier.
Yeah.
And I found, so initially it was vicious and it made it so much worse, and particularly with my rather exposed scalp. It was pretty plain as day, so I was like covering it in like oils and creams and stuff, all good things obviously, but after I think it was about 2 weeks, and I was like, the concentration was very small, and initially it was just like, you know, a couple of teaspoons, cup of water from the shower, and just kind of wash it on, like rinse it in essentially into my scalp, into my voluminous scalp, and then kind of wait for a few minutes and wash the rest of my body, and then rinse it out, and after about 2 weeks, like, it totally cleared. I don't have a dry scalp at all anymore. This is years later, like, and I haven't really had to go back to it. I'm sure there's other things that change physiologically, and I was doing other things as well, but that was the one that I really noticed. A, it made it so much worse, and then B, like, very quickly made it better.
Mm. And that's interesting, because that's reminding me, actually, as a fungal remedy, it's so important. Mm. And if people have those kind of toenail funguses, or between the toes,
runner's
athlete's
foot,
all of that kind of stuff, which people can feel really shy about, especially coming to yoga, people always keeping their socks on, and you know that they're just uncomfortable about it. getting their feet
That's
out.
Funny.
Apple
okay.
cider vinegar baths in the evening is a really good way to deal with that.
Makes a
just
lot of sense.
Just to keep
yeah.
your feet really clean.
Yeah.
And just to get rid of those areas that get hot and damp. Obviously, it's great for.
You know, there's a secret runner's trick as well. I got told by a runner once in the shop. They wee on their feet in the shower.
Oh, I heard that actually.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Of
like,
course.
Actually, I mean, it makes total sense. Because, again, there's lots of acids and lots of things.
Yeah.
Without getting into, like, urine therapy,
yes.
which I've never tried. Have you tried?
I have not tried.
Are you being honest?
Not on purpose.
Okay. Whoa! Let's not go there. But, okay.
I mean, like, there may have been a situation where, like, I'm in the sun shower with my son, splashback happens.
Oh,
I mean, like,
fantastic.
Like,
oh, you're poor.
I may not.
Okay, yeah.
I intentionally hope I haven't. Not like there was some accidental situation. I don't even know what that would be.
I don't know either. I love it. Oh, you poor thing. Why do you always go walk into, like, your car crash in episode 4, was it? Oh, wow. Like,
I feel like I'm going to have to set you up for some now.
I didn't set you up for that. I promise. That was all your own doing. You gave that to yourself.
Not intentionally. You took it there.
Yeah, so mistaken urine therapy. So what are the things apple cider vinegar? So one of the other things that it's fantastic for, obviously, as an antimicrobial, is for sore throats. Like, it's
yes.
the best, not the best. Okay, that's one of the best. There's like a list of things that I use when I have a sore throat, at the start of a sore throat. Gargling with sage tea, gargling with obviously salt water. Everybody knows about that one. Propolis, oregano oil, and also cider vinegar. So mixing all those into a big nasty mess and gargling with it is like whompingly good for helping to get to a sore throat, or even like, you know, more serious stuff when you got someone got these little spots white in the throat. You know, it's a powerful antimicrobial. It's a good mix.
Yeah, and they say also if you ever you're using mouthwashes for bad breath, that kind of stuff, it's really really good for that.
Yeah.
Because now there's lots of studies saying that mouthwashes really damage
the bacterial culture. Yeah.
In your mouth, and actually they can make it much worse and create those environments. And so instead of redoing that, you should just be mouthwashing with your cider vinegar, and that's really good for preventative.
Makes sense.
Just keeps everything.
And also, as you're like, one of the really interesting links between, so there's a profound link between gingivitis, between gum disease and heart disease, because there's such an amount of circulatory kind of supply to the mouth. Any inflammatory compounds that are produced as a result of that gingivitis, of what the bacteria give off, have been shown to like transmit to the heart. So there's a really strong like causal link there, like between, and a spectrum of things obviously, but between gingivitis and heart disease. So if you want to help your heart, weirdly rinsing your mouth with cider vinegar might be really helpful, or oil pulling, or all those number of other processes
just
that are
ways that you can keep your oral health naturally.
Absolutely.
I like trying to find these ways where you're not just constantly buying products that cost more money.
Absolutely.
They're things that you have in your cupboard and you can use them for so many
for so many things. It's the coconut oil of vinegars. That's
just
right.
Coconut oil and apple cider vinegar.
You're done.
You heal everything.
It would be an interesting clinic, but you get through a lot.
You actually would. The other thing is obviously arthritic conditions.
Yeah.
That's really good for managing arthritic conditions.
So gout and arthritic conditions is actually the thing that we have recommended probably most for in the shop. Like taking a tablespoon a day and a glass of water in the morning. People are coming back and talking, but like testimonially, you know, that's the only thing they do. And it's weird because when they, you know, people obviously are trying lots of different things and it's difficult to isolate what's actually working, but when they stop doing it, which quite often, like, we're humans, we just fall off the wagon from time to time, they notice the symptoms come back, they start taking cider vinegar again and the symptoms fade away. So it's the hippuric acid, as I understand it anyway, helps to break down uric acid crystals that gather the joints, which is one of the reasons that you get that swelling on fingers and swelling on joints. And so, yeah, if you can help to excrete uric acid from the system, you can really help to reduce, particularly gout, obviously, but all other, I think other rheumatic conditions, other arthritic conditions can really help as well.
Yeah, I have a friend who's young and fit and healthy but suffers from arthritic conditions. And the major change she made in her diet was to bring in acid cider vinegar, and she's really massive.
Wow.
Being able to reduce her dosage of medication that she was on just from doing that in the beginning. And now she's started to make a lot of other changes in her diet to look at how does movement affect it, how does vegetarian diet affect it, and all these different things, just to see what happens.
And was she always fit?
Yeah.
Okay, she was fit and then got her... Ouch, that's a tough... What age is she?
I'd say she's 32.
Wow, okay, that's really tough. And it's not rheumatoid arthritis, it's not the autoimmune version, it's the wear and tear.
Yeah.
That's very rough to have in your 30s.
I know.
But what's nice about, I suppose, starting with something like apple cider vinegar, I don't know if she was into or not into kind of natural remedies, but it's a great a gateway natural remedy. And when people kind of like, you know, buy into one thing or make one positive change and like from themselves, they begin to kind of like open the door and go, okay, well, what about all those weird things that Lydia or Finn were talking about before? And it's nice to kind of get that an easy way to make a quick change, and then you can start to make the more fundamental changes to follow
Yeah,
on.
exactly. And I think the other thing is it's nice that you can find Irish ones. You know,
Yeah.
there are local ones that you can make your own, you
Absolutely.
know, and it's not something that we're having to kind of constantly outsource, like you were
Yeah.
saying in the beginning. It's so nice to feel like you're doing something that's a local remedy that's from our area, that has heritage here, that's been
Massively.
proven to help our bodies,
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
our
yeah,
types
yeah.
of body.
Yeah, I think there's a strong case for not buying into taking, you know, a lot of remedies from abroad and looking at, you know, I think constitutions and physiologies that grow in a certain place, the same as plants, like they're built to go alongside certain plants that grow in a certain place. Funnily enough, we have so much of an issue in Ireland with them, with excess damp in our environment. And amazingly, we have one of the best, I think, mucilage and expectorants known to man, which is carrageen moss, like
Yeah.
growing on our shores. And it's a
It's no
really,
accident.
it's no accident. I fully believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have a specific, if you weren't going to be making your own, if you weren't comfortable with that yet, or you didn't know how to, do you have a cider
Ones
vinegar
that I
that you
like.
can recommend that you
Yeah.
like?
So I think we carry about four different brands that I really like. The most important things to get, you want to make sure it's organic, it's unfiltered, and it's
Okay.
unpasteurized. Well, actually, three things. There you go.
And
Those
that will mean naturally that it has the mother.
exactly. If it's unfiltered, it'll have the mother. If it's unpasteurized, it'll be live and have some probiotic culture left in it. And if it's organic, obviously you're just trusting there's not going to be pesticide residue, etc.
Yeah.
So there's like there's three or four really good brands that we have. And interesting. So without wanting to sling mud from one brand to another, we're about to start stocking a fifth brand, which I only just found out about in the last couple of weeks. So we were at a conference over in the UK, and it's a company called Willys, actually, and they really educated me on the production side of vinegar. So Willys was started by the guy who started Tyrrell's Crisps. I don't know,
Oh, really?
Tyrrell's Crisps,
Yeah.
yeah. So he made, I think, quite the small fortune from Tyrrell's Crisps, and went kind of like, okay, well now I want to do interesting projects. I'm like, I'm done with crisps. Fine, sold the crisp company, and then moved on to like he produced a vodka, which or a gin that's quite well known apparently. I can't remember the name of the gin, and then also on the backside of that, he bought orchards and started making apple cider vinegar,
Wow.
and so the lovely thing, so the apple cider vinegar, the gin or vodka thing is like was his big kind of corporate enterprise. I don't know how much I'm telling outside school here, but anyway, that made him, you know, his again another fortune on top of a
Yeah.
fortune. But there was no real soul in it. He didn't feel there was a real soul in it. Understandably, it's selling alcohol. It's, you know, it's got its uses, but
Yeah, it's a different kind of
kind of
thing.
it's a different thing. And so he kind of wanted to do something that was kind of real again and was kind of homegrown. And so he bought these orchards and started up apple cider vinegar production on a tiny level, like micro level. But the beautiful thing is being made with a company that has the resources of this
Yeah.
global, you know, monstrous gin brand.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cheating in a way. But what it does allow them to do is it allows them to be very slow with their production. So one of the problems with apple cider vinegar when you're producing it, you have to acetylate it. Acetylation takes, in proper cider vinegars, 2 months minimum.
Okay.
And so what most big companies and even good raw organic companies are doing, they're like adding acids in to improve, to speed
Okay,
it
to
up,
speed it up.
or even minorly heating it above room temperature but keeping it still raw, to encourage a faster process. Like, in all honesty, you can't say that a cider vinegar is good or bad, you know, based on that. But I genuinely feel that, you know, if you're going to use a product that's been traditionally made for centuries in a certain way, I think sticking to that,
Yeah.
adhering to certain principles of that, and in terms of the time spent in it, it makes sense to
I've
me.
read that wooden barrels is really important.
That's they're also put into barrel whiskey barrels. They're
Yes.
grown, so you get a and over that 2 months you get a more loss. You get that, what's it called, the spirit, oh, what's it called, oh golly, anyway, there's a certain amount that's always lost in that fermentation process, so it concentrates more essentially,
Okay.
that you never get when you're making it over a short period of time. So Willy's, there's some Willy's cider vinegar. Check that out,
Oh, and the
guys.
bottle's
We
lovely
brought a
as
little,
well.
yeah, doozy little one. So Willy's apple cider vinegar with the mother, just tonic or dressing. Will we have a little nip of it
Yeah,
while we're here?
let's do
Now,
it.
usually we'd suggest to kind of like, you know, dilute this, but hey, we're here, so why
All
not? We
right.
haven't got anything to dilute it with. Do you want to try first?
Yeah,
Cool, there you
okay.
go. I can have your cooties.
Neat, thanks.
So what do we think?
It's really apply.
It smells like apple juice, actually, which is
Doesn't it?
funny. And I don't remember really noticing that with a lot of other brands of
No.
these.
What I noticed when I made my own was that it was very, my own one from home was really, really apply, and it was much more like apple
Ditto.
juice.
This is
And
more
this
like
is
that.
much closer to that, for sure.
So that's a really, I mean, from an organoleptic point of view, my body is telling me that's the right one. And if it doesn't
From
taste
a what point of view?
organoleptic,
Let's talk about that. Organoleptic. Throw that in there.
So organoleptic is mouthfeel and taste and all the things that your mouth does with things.
And is that just organ?
Just organ. It's just the one organ called the organoleptic organ.
Is that just for your mouth?
Just your mouth, yeah. Organoleptic principle is like texture and taste and flavor and just your response that your mouth has to something and what that tells your brain about it. So like
I'm eating this delicious cider vinegar dressing on my food. It's organoleptically interesting.
Organoleptically, it ticks the boxes for being a good cider vinegar.
Okay.
My body's saying like this is good. So let's say it's an organoleptic.
Like a bouquet in wine being.
Exactly, wine is another really good reference for it. Yeah, exactly.
I've got it. We've all learned.
Sorry.
Maybe we should start this new thing. On this podcast where Finn teaches us an interesting.
It's a good Scrabble winner, I guess, though, isn't it?
Hmm. Would you even fit that with
the I don't know how many. I'm not sure. Anyway.
Digress. I was going to say divulge. We divulge our words.
Right. So, anything more to share on cider vinegar? Or where are we at?
Well, one thing, and I don't know if this is a thing that's been studied massively or anything, but how I would use it in my house in my life would tend to be that, say, I eat a meal and my belly just doesn't feel great afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it isn't sitting well. It's just a little bit bubbly, or I don't know. It just doesn't feel nice.
Yeah.
I would always have some cider vinegar in hot water, and it just settles your stomach straight away.
Interesting. It seems like some people. It's such a strange thing. I know almost equal amounts of people who swear by that, and people say like, oh, that just totally disrupts my gut.
Oh, really? No, it just makes it so much better for me.
Yeah, so it's like it makes sense that it kind of like improves that. Well, it's improving the acidity in the stomach, so it helps to like acidify the cultures, the food that's in your stomach, and helps to pass through quickly. So what's interesting, your duodenal sphincter, which is the little bottom release valve on your stomach, won't open until the pH is dropped below a certain level after food enters.
Okay.
So if your food is, let's say you're like, I don't have enough hydrochloric acid being produced, that food is going to sit there until that acid is produced to a significant quantity to allow that to remove.
Yeah.
So by introducing cider vinegar, you're going, okay, drop the pH, and the duodenal sphincter goes, okay, cool, I can let the food go now. So it kind of makes sense.
That's interesting, and I've also heard that for heartburn, it can be really good, because even though it seems like that would be not
the worst thing,
what it actually does is it seems to work in the same kind of principle as homeopathy, in a way that you give it a little bit of that, and then that stimulates the cells that are acid forming to not need to overproduce acid. That's what it's.
Yeah. So what I understand of it with heartburn, because heartburn is so frustrating. This is the most. Okay, we're going to contradict the medical convention thing here, but that's okay. I'm not standing in my shop. So heartburn is nearly always diagnosed by the conventional medical profession as hyperchloridria, excess stomach acid.
Yeah.
In life, we produce stomach acid reasonably effectively unless we are stressed, we are smoking, we are drinking coffee or tea, we are eating too much salt, we are eating too much sugar. Have you found a person who doesn't do those things in life?
Yes, no.
And do most people get that sense of heartburn when they're stressed, when they're eating late, when they're, you know, it's chronically wrongly diagnosed. I really don't get it. And the worst part is they're given PPIs, they're given antacids that then further rob them of that stomach acid, rob them of the ability to break down the macronutrients into micronutrients like magnesium, vitamin B6 and zinc that are absolutely vital for production of stomach acid. So you have that vicious circle.
Yeah.
And then people wonder why, like when they come off the PPIs, things go like radically wrong, or they try to come off them. So, yeah, if it were me or my family, I would say like maybe, you know, think twice, get a second opinion, maybe try to do some home things first if you're getting some heartburn, settle the digestive system using aloe vera juice, maybe try apple cider vinegar, but go very slowly with that because it can be quite irritating, and then start to use things to actually charge the production of stomach acid.
Yeah.
So things like digestive bitters, so gentian, centaurium, astragalus, rosemary, all of these sorts of things that have digestive bitter effects, and those bitters concentrate our stomach acid, concentrate the production of digestive juices
and acidify the gut. Like
big time. Rocket capers. Yeah.
Olives.
Yeah.
All the livery foods.
Yeah, which is interesting. I mean, like, you look at Italian culture, they have, like, bitters to start their meal, they have bitters at the middle of the meal, and bitters to finish, you know, it's digestives as well. It makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Rant over, sorry.
Yes, there we go. I think we've covered our topic.
Hopefully, yeah. If you have any questions, let us know, obviously. And if you want to rant back at us, let us know as well. That's what you can tell us on YouTube.
And also, if there's anything else you'd like us to cover, so we've done apple cider vinegar, if there's anything else that you're thinking, oh, I'd love to know more about that, you you could just comment below, and then we can think about doing a podcast on that topic too.
Absolutely. And we haven't got a bag to show you today, but there will be, with every single podcast we shoot and release, a big bag full of NewsEst, a NewsEst bag full of goodies going to whoever posts the nicest comment. We'll choose you. We're going to have to get some comments soon, guys. Actually, high ratings. We have a few of those. We might have to get some NewsEst bags,
yeah,
all right?
We need to start, yeah.
Okay, so you might see some NewsEst giveaways happening for my next episode.
So, and like and subscribe. We've got some really exciting interviews.
Oh, we've got some great ones coming.
So make sure you stay
tuned. I'm not good at keeping secrets. I haven't been keeping secrets.
Have you not?
No, but we won't tell you right here.
Okay, no.
All right. Stay tuned. Thanks so many for tuning in.
Thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye, guys. Thanks.